Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't shot, you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Hello, everyone. I am not Karen Cataline. My name is Casper Stockham, but welcome to Spouting Off show, Karen's show. Now, she is still on a honeymoon. I don't know who takes honeymoons for like a whole month, but Karen is doing that with her new hubby, and we will call him HW. And her and HW are having a great time. It's more of like a extended sabbatical. No, it's like an extended honeymoon, maybe sabbatical, maybe something in between, not really sure. But it looks like there's one more guest host will be coming next week, and then Karen will be back in the seat and spouting off. So, again, my name is Casper Stockham, and this is going to be a very different show than maybe you've been used to the whole time, because I want to talk about some things that are probably not well, I know they're not talked about on this show because Karen doesn't get into these type of topics, but I want to cover some things that may be a little bit new to you, but I want to give you the opportunity to chime in as well. So I would love to have you call into the show, and you can call in 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I want you to be able to ask a black man anything. So if you don't know by now, I'm a black man. I'm a American who happens to be black. And I'm going to explain that that to you and a lot more. So just so you know who I am, my story is pretty pretty typical of a black conservative. So I grew up on the East Coast in Connecticut. I grew up in a very progressive, liberal household. By the time I was 17, I hated all things Republican and most things black. Most things white. And it's funny because I really didn't know any Republicans. I didn't know anything about Republicans. I just knew that my family was Democrat, and that was the only thing to be. So we were Democrat, and we bought Ford cars. So back then, even families were even loyal to car dealerships. And in our case, it was Ford. We did not buy any other type of car other than a Ford. So it was kind of cool for me because I wound up driving Ford Mustangs when I was younger. But my dad was a politician. He was really into politics. He just was he ran for state office, state rep and state senator. He was on the Board of Education. He was also on, I believe, the school board. So he was really into politics. And I can remember standing on street corners waving signs. I can remember T-shirts and things like that. And growing up, you know, that was just a part of our life. But it was strange because it didn't leave a good feeling in my gut. It didn't leave a good taste in my mouth about politics. So as I got older, I knew the last thing I wanted to be was a politician because my dad was doing it. And, you know, I didn't see really anything good coming from it. He was always mad. He was always frustrated. He was always fighting with people down at City Hall or some other location. And now that I look back on it, he was fighting with Democrats. He wasn't fighting with Republicans because we didn't know any Republicans. He was fighting with the Democrats in his local area. So as I grew older, at 17, I went into the Air Force, and that was my exposure to the world. And, you know, it's called, it's that aha moment, or it's that pattern interrupt that happens to people. And that's what allowed me to start becoming more conservative. And another funny story, I was in the Air Force and I was in an officer training program. And it allowed for minorities to be in the program with low grades. And this is a program, I guess, the Carter administration put into place. And when Reagan won the election, and I was 17, I didn't vote at the time. But when he won the election, one of the first things his administration did was cut that program. And I was like, man, those Republicans are always taking stuff away from us poor minority people. And I was so mad and so frustrated because I said, see, you know, they don't really care about us. And it was funny because we want, or at least we should want, our military to be the sharpest, brightest people on the planet. But this program allowed for minorities to be in the program with low grades. Now, I was getting good grades. I actually didn't need the program, but it was a safety net. I felt like I needed it, and because people told me I needed help, I needed the man to help me out. In this case, that's the government. So, you know, I needed the government help. So I'm in class one day, mad and frustrated and cussing out Republicans. And something snapped in my mind. You know, I wasn't even paying attention to the instructor. I was just arguing with myself and saying, man, I can't believe they cut the program. But they didn't cut me out of class. They didn't remove me from class because I was getting good grades. So I didn't need the program. That put me on a level playing field with everybody else in class. The guy next to me who was white and the girl next to him who was Asian or whatever. We all had to achieve and keep good grades in order to, you know, to pass the class. And something snapped in my mind. I said, wait a minute. You mean I'm not out of the program? No. Again, this is a conversation I'm having with myself. I'm not out of the program. I'm fine. Just keep getting good grades. That caused me to start looking at everything that was being done to quote unquote help us. And from that time, it didn't happen overnight, but over the course of several years, I started to become very conservative. In fact, I became so conservative, I couldn't vote for anybody because nobody, none of the politicians, at least that I saw, were conservative enough for me. So I just checked out of the political system. Now, I was informed, you know, I'd pay attention to who's running for office and so forth. But I looked at the candidates on both sides, Republican and Democrat, and I was like, please. And it wasn't until Ross Perot showed up that I really started to pay more attention to politics, because I like Ross Perot because he was a businessman. I liked the fact that he had made his own money. He wasn't on the government dole. He wasn't taking money from people. He was providing a service, and he made a lot of money. So I liked that about him. In fact, that was the first time I even voted, was for Ross Perot. But after Ross Perot lost, of course, you know, and Clinton was in office, I went back to just being an observer. And I was a very conscious observer. I was plugged in. I was dialed in to stuff. I was watching what was going on. But I never wanted to really participate because I didn't see anybody worth voting for. So fast forward to 2012. Now, in the meantime, I'm on the list, right? So 2012 comes around, and we have a pretty good selection of candidates running for office on the Republican side, including Herman Cain. So Herman Cain comes into town. This is after the primary, to where he was bumped out of the race. He comes to town and he buys like 100 people lunch. He pays for the lunch and he invites a bunch of people. I was on some kind of list, so I go to this lunch. And Herman Cain is telling the crowd, this is the most important election ever. And I'm saying, yeah, I heard that one before. They always say that, right? Every election is the most important election. I said, yeah, okay. And he said, you know, we all have to vote. And I'm saying to myself, I am not voting for Romney. Are you kidding me? He is definitely not conservative. And he's also proven that today, you know, 7 years later, 8 years later, you know, he's not conservative. Anyway, so after the luncheon, I go up to shake his hand, because, you know, it's Herman Cain, right? So I go up to take a picture and shake his hand, and he shakes my hand and he holds on to it and he pulls me in and he says, young man, we all have to vote. And I'm thinking, who in the world told Herman Cain that I was not voting for Romney? Now, understand, Romney was running against Obama. I didn't vote for Obama either. I don't care if he's black or green or whatever. I didn't like his policies. I could care less about his skin color. I didn't like his policies. So I didn't vote for him the first time when he was running against McCain. And I definitely didn't vote for him the second time when he was running against Romney. Anyway, so Herman Cain tells me I have to vote. And I'm like, oh, man, I can't believe I'm going to vote for this guy. So I hold my nose and I vote for Romney. Well, we all know what happened, at least here in Colorado. And by the way, I'm in Colorado. About 10:30 our time, it was over. Romney got spanked, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, how in the world did this happen? And so then I decided, you know what? I'm going to get busy. I'm going to get busy in politics now. I'm going to do something. And I was looking around for somebody that wanted to do something, and I found a whole bunch of people that were doing absolutely nothing. They eat, they meet, they complain, and then they go home. And then again, they meet, they eat, they complain, then they go home. And I said, man, this is crazy. And I finally found a group of folks that were doing something, so I joined that. And that was the American Conservatives of Color. So I joined that organization. I wound up becoming the president of that organization. Long story. But I started to get involved in politics. And here recently, actually, for the past two election cycles, I ran for Congress here in Denver. And it's funny because I told Herman Cain, I had a chance to meet him back in 2016. And I was in Cleveland. And I saw him and I said, you need to hear my story. I said, because you told me to vote in 2012. I voted for Romney. He lost. And then I got involved in politics. And now I'm running for Congress. And it's all because of you, Mr. Cain. And he thought that was a pretty good story. He put me on his radio show. But anyway, so I ran for Congress twice in a very progressively held Democrat district in Denver. And I lost twice, but I learned a lot during that process. And who knows? Who knows what is in store for me down the road. But that got me more exposure, and I got a chance to meet Karen. So she asked me to do this show for her, and I said absolutely, because I personally also have two podcasts that I do every week. My wife and I have a relationship show we do called I Am Love Builders, and then I do a podcast called Casper's Take. And that's on a network called PJ Net. So you can find all my podcasts and everything on my website, which is AllStarSuccessAlliance.com. That's AllStarSuccessAlliance.com. And you can click on ASA Radio, and you'll see all the podcasts and all the stuff that I'm doing. Okay, so back to the show. I want you to call in so you can ask a black man anything. I'm a black man. I'm a black conservative. I'm a Christian conservative. I love the Constitution. I love my country. I served my country proudly, not in the beginning, but over time, I became very patriotic. So I love my country. I love the Constitution. I don't love everything we do in America. But most of the stuff we do is pretty darn good. In fact, I think we are the shining light in our world. I think if America's light goes out, a lot of the lights around the world go out. So it's something that we have to be conscious of. We have to keep working at it. You know, I think Reagan said it best. Freedom is only one or two generations away from going extinct. So we need to be very conscious and very aware of what's going on in our world and fight for freedom. You know, that's something we haven't done as a society, well, at least from the conservative Republican side. We haven't fought for things. We don't go on the offense for freedom. We will defend it from time to time. We will defend the Constitution from time to time. But we don't go on the offense. We need to be out there selling freedom, selling liberty, selling justice, all these kind of things that we used to do a lot, but we don't do it much anymore. Today on the show, I'm also want to talk about Trump and the black and Hispanic vote, because it's going to be very critical coming up in this new election cycle. And I want to also talk about some groups out there called Walk Away Blexit, Lexit, and Jexodus. These are four organizations of individuals from all walks of life who have literally left the Democrat Party. Some call it the Democrat Plantation. But these groups have left the Democrat Party, and we need to talk about it. And I'm amazed that more Republicans are not talking about these groups. In fact, I'm not just amazed. I'm stunned, and I'm a little pissed off because Trump talks about them. He's invited them to the White House. But yet very few Republican leaders have mentioned these groups. I know they know they exist, but they're not reaching out to these groups. And that's sad. That's very, very sad. So anyway, so I want you to be able to call into the show and ask me anything. The lines are open. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Please call in. Please ask me a question. You can ask me anything. I will not judge your question. No question is stupid, other than ask me about my hair color or something like that. But other than that, you can ask me anything you want to ask me. All right. So Trump and the black and Hispanic vote. Now, during the 2016 race, Trump got about 8% of the black vote, which was, I think, a little bit more than Romney and McCain got. But it wasn't, it wasn't all that high. It was kind of predictable that he was going to get somewhere around 8 to 10%. And he was able to win overwhelmingly over Hillary based on the Electoral College votes. Now, since the 2016 election, Trump's approval rating, numbers, everything else have gone way up in the black community. But it really would depend on who you ask, because if you ask CNN or MSNBC or CBS or any of those outlets, even Fox sometimes, if you ask them, they would say that his approval rating has not gone up. But even the NAACP did a poll, I think it was last year, that showed that Trump had a 22% approval rating. Now, even if that only equates to a 15% voting turnout for Trump in the black community, that's a landslide victory for Trump, not just on the Electoral College side, but now on the popular vote side. So the Democrats are scared. They are scared to death, and they are pulling out all the stops they can to try to take the president down. They have to take him down. They have to impeach him. They were hoping that there was going to be some collusion and obstruction. They're still hoping to prove obstruction. I think sometimes they're even trying to bring back collusion because they don't have anything. The economy is doing well. Trump's agenda is being well received out there in the marketplace, and they are struggling. They're in full-out panic mode. So they will do anything they can to take down our president. So the black vote, let's start with the black vote. Most people would assume or say that blacks hate Trump. But I got to tell you, and this is easily verifiable. Everything I'm telling you is verifiable, even through a simple Google search. And I don't even think Google is on Trump's side. But all of this can be proved through Google. Before Trump came down the escalator in 2015 or whenever it was, he was loved by the black community. He was loved by the black elites. He was loved by the black entertainers. He was loved by the black sports people. He was loved by a lot of the black folks. Now, I personally could have cared less about Trump. I'll talk about my Trump vote later. But when he first came down the escalator, I'm like, dude, no way. No way am I voting for Trump. He's not conservative. And he's becoming more conservative by the day, it seems like. But at that time, he was not conservative. A lot of the black progressive liberals loved him. Oprah loved Trump. Snoopy Dogg, Love Trump, Jay-Z, Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan, Evander Holyfield, Jay-Z, Beyonce, they all love Trump. There are pictures of Trump with all of those individuals, multiple pictures. Spike Lee, I mean, come on. He was taking pictures with all of them. Snoop Dogg did a Trump roast, some kind of show where he was roasting Trump. You know, they all hung out together. Anytime they needed money for anything, the first call, not the last call or the second, the first call they made was to Donald Trump because he was a billionaire and he would support their efforts. He would support their programs. He would support their organizations. He would always send them money. And, you know, that's what billionaires in New York do, right? So he was loved by all of those folks until he came down the escalator and said he was running for president as a Republican. Had he come down the escalator and said he was running for president as a Democrat, he would have got a lot of their support. But I don't know if he would have won as a Democrat. I think, I think the stars aligned perfectly for him to come down the escalator and run as a Republican. And at first, now I'm saying this now with hindsight, because when that dude came down the escalator in 2015, I was not impressed, not interested, was not going to vote for him. And, you know, and I didn't during the primary season. I didn't vote for Trump. Now, my mom, who she passed away in 2017, but in 2015, Trump comes down the escalator. And my mom, who was 87 at the time, she voted for Obama twice. She said, "Trump's my guy." And I'm like, "What? Have you lost your mind, Mom? Are you crazy?" She said, "No, I like Trump." She said, "He has his own money and he has his own jet." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, that's not enough for me." So during the primary season, I was a Cruz guy. I was a Cari Fiorino guy. I was a Ben Carson. I mean, you know, Bobby Jindal. Any of these guys would have been great. I wasn't so much a the one guy in New Jersey, Chris Christie. I wasn't a Chris Christie fan. I wasn't a Marco Rubio fan. I was a Rand Paul fan, still a Rand Paul fan. But when Trump came down the escalator and he got into the race and started wiping the floor with those guys, I'm like, "Oh, my God." And then when he won the primary, I said, "Well, you know, it's a 50-50 toss-up for me. I definitely did not and was not going to vote for Hillary." But, you know, I was like, 50-50, I'll vote for Trump. We'll see what happens. That was then, and this is now. Now I will be skipping, jumping down the aisle, going to vote for Trump today because he's becoming one of the best presidents that we've ever had. Some of the stuff he's done, and, you know, I'd love to get into a discussion when anybody wants to call in, but when it comes to the economy, when it comes to helping increase the job, help lowering the unemployment rate and things like that, I mean, he's just been phenomenal. What he's doing overseas is working. And we'll get into that maybe, but, you know, he's really turned out to be a really great president, and I'm proud now to be able to vote for him a second time. And I believe that he's going to really I think he's going to win not just the Electoral College. I think he's going to win the popular vote as well. I think it's going to be funny because the Democrats have this movement to wipe out the Electoral College. And I think that's going to backfire on them as well, because it's not going to matter. This time out, I'm pretty sure Trump is going to just sweep the whole field. And based upon the people they're putting up, I mean, when I look at Real Clear Politics, when I look at their polling, they show everybody that's running against Trump on the Democrat side literally beating him head to head if they were to go against him. They show Biden beating him. They show Sanders beating him. They show Warren beating him. They show Harris beating him. They show Buttigieg just barely beating him. So anybody that the Democrats have put up as far as Real Clear Politics polls show, all those candidates would beat Trump head to head. And I got news for you. None of them are going to even come close. And the hope is for the Democrats, hope is for Biden to get the nomination because they think he has the best chance. But not even Biden will come close to beating Trump. Now, again, that's my opinion. You know, we all have our opinions. I'd love to hear yours. And you can call into the show at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I'd love to hear your comments about it, but I don't see Trump losing. Now, we got a long way between now and 2020. A lot can happen. A lot can unfold. They can still, and they are going to still attacking Trump any way they can. But he's been very resilient this whole time. He's been able to fight back or whatever, you know, in Trump style. You know, and I'm not excited about Trump style. I'm not excited about his tweets, but I like the result. I like the fact that I like the result that his I like the result that his tweets are getting. I don't like the way he goes about it. You know, it's too brash for me. But at the end of the day, I love the results that he's getting. I love the way he puts these folks in his in their place, and you know that's playing out as well in his overseas actions. It's playing out with his stance on Iran and him moving the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. All the presidential candidates and president, former presidents, and the Congress have all stated that that should have happened many years ago. They all were afraid or whatever to do it because of the consequences. Well, Trump did it. And that was, what, about a year and a couple days ago that was a, you know, annual thing. And, you know, there's still going to be conflict in the Middle East. But guess what, folks? There's been conflicts in the Middle East for thousands of years. And there's going to be conflicts for thousands of more probably because that's just the way that region of the country is. They are in a place to where the strongest hand rules in that region. It was funny because after the Iraq war, they asked the U.S. They asked the U.S. military, okay, so now what? Right? And the U.S. military said, well, you know, you can start holding elections. You can start electing, you know, people that you want in office. They're like, well, you know, what are you guys going to do? He said, well, we're out of here. You know, we're done. They're like, okay. See, so that was very strange for them. They were expecting the U.S. to just take over and just rule. And the U.S. was like, no, we're going to let you, you know, we're going to let you decide your own fate. So anyway, I think we're coming up pretty close to a break. I think we got another minute or so. And I have a very special guest that is going to be on the line. Her name is Scout Ennis, and she is a friend of mine. And we're also working on a project that we're going to talk about when she comes in after the break. Scout has a great story. I want you to hear her story, and I'm going to talk about what her and I the project that her and I are going to be working on when we come back from break. But I think we have another minute or so left on that. When it comes to the Hispanic vote, we are coming up. I think we got like 30 seconds left. But when we come back after Scout is done, I'm going to tell you about the Hispanic vote, and then we're going to talk about Walkaway, Blexit, Lexit, and Jexitus. So, yeah, when we come back, we'll do that. You know, it's again, I'm honored to be able to co-host on the show, Spouting Off on Karen's show. Her and HW, I wish them well on their little short sabbatical. But you'll have the opportunity to hear her in a couple weeks. She'll be back in the saddle, and I'm sure she's going to have a lot to share with you guys when she comes back. But we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we will get into an interview with Scout. And We'll be ready with the rest of the show.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.KarenCataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.KarenCataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.KarenCataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off.
Hey, welcome back to Spouting Off Show, and I am Casper Stockham on the Karen Cataline Show, and I have a very special guest online with me. She's a friend of mine now, and we're working on a project that we'll be talking about. Her name is Scout, and Scout, are you out there?
Yes, I'm here. Happy to be on.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on. So, for the folks that are listening, Scout, tell them a little bit about yourself, just a quick little synopsis of who you are.
Okay, well, in a few sentences, I am a former Democrat. I grew up in liberal Boulder, Colorado. My whole family is Democrat, and I went to CU Boulder, working on Obama's campaign, doing a lot of different campus campaign events there. And then I got introduced to social justice warriors, leftist politics, and that I literally became Republican overnight after one of my friends told me when I was experiencing a really bad and awful situation in my life that I had white privilege and therefore I didn't have any right to complain about my issues because I was white. Never mind the fact that, you know, my dad and my whole family grew up poor. They worked their way up. None of that mattered.
Yeah.
And so I became Republican overnight, and I worked on Rand Paul's campaign shortly thereafter, and now I am the Boulder County Republicans Executive Director. So it's been an interesting 4 years, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I want to unpack some of that because we met a couple years ago. You were working on a paper, a thesis, I believe, and it was, what was the title of that paper?
Yeah, I worked on my honors thesis in the anthropology department at CU Boulder titled Black Republicans, a Minority Within a Minority.
Right. So you Yeah, so you interviewed myself and a bunch of other black conservatives trying to find out why the heck were we Republicans?
Yes, that's right, because once I really saw what leftist politics really was, I really credit black conservatives and black Republicans awakening me to that reality, because I would see all these leftists accept black Americans into their movement, no problem. But once someone like Clarence Thomas, Thomas Sewell came into the conversation, they called them Uncle Toms, really derogatory, racist names, and it really made me think twice about their diversity and inclusive rhetoric, as they say. And I think a lot of conservatives like me have also been awakened because of what black conservatives have experienced. Andrew Breitbart was a great example. Once he saw how Clarence Thomas was treated during the Anita Hill hearings, he has kind of a similar story. He became Republican, he became conservative overnight. So I was really interested in black conservatives and their stories, because in the academic literature, they're treated just as poorly as they are in the mass media and by the leftists that you see on TV. They're called derogatory names, and no one in the academic literature even bothers to go interview black conservatives, which is astounding to me, because in anthropology, you are taught a method called ethnography, where you go out and you actually talk to people, you understand the culture and where people are coming from. But what I was told was, oh, no, we don't do that, you know, when it comes to black conservatives. We already know their story. We already know that they're racist. We already know that they're Uncle Toms. And it was just unbelievable. It made me even more conservative after hearing that.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been called all kind of names out there. And now I wear those names as a badge of honor. It really doesn't bother me anymore. In fact, I kind of get a kick out of it. I'm probably one of the oddballs on social media, you know, to where I engage with folks that disagree with me. And the angrier they get, the nicer I get. So they're calling me literally just swearing at me and cussing at me and calling me all kinds of all the names you mentioned and then a whole bunch more. And instead of me responding with, well, you know, you're just stupid and you don't know what you're talking about, I say, oh, you know what? I love you guys. You know, you guys are awesome. And they're like, how dare you say I'm that's funny. It's funny.
Well, and what they forget is that Uncle Tom, and Candace Owens says this perfectly, was the hero in Uncle Tom's cabin. You know, like, so wear it with pride is what I tell conservatives, and exactly what you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, so those of you who don't know, I also wrote a book, a small little book called Love Saves America. So I practice love in a lot of the conversations that I'm in, and it's just funny to see the responses. And speaking of books, Scout and I are working on a new book. We're going to be co-authoring it together, and hopefully it'll be out here in a couple months. And it's called Renewing the Black and Millennial Mind. And the subtitle is How to Become Woke and Free in America. And we think by the time that we get this book out and people start to really understand what it's about, it's going to ruffle some feathers, you know, but it's going to be the truth, and it's going to wake people up. And it's going to hopefully free some people up that are out there struggling, you know, with a lot of the challenges that they're facing.
Yeah, and I especially want to communicate this message of freedom and awakening to millennials, because I think the Democrats have done, honestly, a fantastic job with their rhetoric. Even though their policies are not compassionate and coming from a place of love, in my opinion, their rhetoric does communicate compassion and love. You look at Elizabeth Warren and what she's doing, saying, oh, the taxpayer is going to pay off student loans. That sounds nice. You know, it sounds nice coming from her, I suppose. But when you dig down deeper, it's really not that nice. You know, the morality of forcing a taxpayer to pay for my education, I think is greatly amoral. But millennials gravitate towards that because Republicans in my opinion, don't have a plan to address probably one of the greatest economic burdens our generation is going to have to face. So I love Republicans, I love conservatives, but we need to become, I think, a little bit more compassionate and positive in our rhetoric to attract millennials. Because yeah. among millennials, Republicans have a very bad name, which shouldn't come as a surprise to many.
No, absolutely. You know, and I blame Republicans because they wind up just being a party of no as opposed to the party of solutions. You know, so they're quick to say no to stuff, you know, say no to paying off student loans. OK, then what is the solution then? Because the student loan crisis that we're in right now is of government making. You know, they caused the problem. So they need to come up with some solutions to fix the problem. And I would be more excited from Elizabeth Warren if she did something like Robert Smith did the other day, to where he said he was going to pay off the entire 2019 graduating class of student loans. Well, he can do that because he's a billionaire. You know,
but in Elizabeth Warren, in Elizabeth Warren's world, he can't do that, you know, because, I mean, it's kind of a contradictory, you know, I guess in their world, because they want to force rich people to do that, whereas he, you know, Rob Smith voluntarily did that.
Exactly.
You know, I think it's a point of contention for them to address how wonderful and impactful that moment was.
Yeah, it's a problem for them, you know. So now they're saying, well, you know, that's nice, but we need a better solution. Well, and again, to the point that we've been making, the Republicans need to step up to the plate and come up with some viable solutions to the challenges that we're facing. And that's the part that we're missing. We see them saying no, you know, like they did in Alabama with abortion. You know, they just say, you know, they put an end to abortions. Okay, but there's a back-end problem there that still exists, you know. The reason why abortions became illegal is because the images of women in the alleyways with, you know, coat hangers kind of doing it themselves, you know, those were the images that were plastered all over the place, and it caused us to get into this legalized abortion state. So we have to address these problems with some solutions, and that's what I'm not seeing from Republicans.
Well, and I think the Republican Party apparatus as a whole needs major reforming. I think you expressed this to me when you were running for Congressional District 1, is there was hardly any funding for you coming from the state party or other groups. But the yeah. Democrats, they play to win, and they don't see any district as being off limits. They were funding candidates, Democratic candidates all the way down in El Paso County, in red districts. And I think the Republicans need to have a total mindset change when it comes to this. We need to play to win. And most of the time, I see Republicans wanting to complain more than win. You know, it's okay to be right. You know, I like how Republicans are right on many issues, but we need to win at the same time. And I think Ted Trumpa said that on Devil's Advocate with John Caldera a couple months ago.
Yeah.
You know, he's a Democrat, and he said, you know, Republicans need to start caring about winning. Democrats, that's all they care about. And he's totally right.
Yeah.
So I think we need to have a mindset shift for sure.
Well, absolutely. We are great on defense. You know, when it comes to recalls and it comes to rallies and it comes to fighting crazy bills down at the state house. I mean, we will rally the troops, and parents will show up, and hundreds of concerned citizens will show up at the Capitol, and they'll wait for hours upon hours just to testify, you know, for 3 minutes or a minute or 30 seconds or whatever it is. We are really good at that. But we are not good at going on the offense and creating organizations to go out and do voter registration and to go out and do outreach and to go out and do the things we need to do to make a difference long term. Short term, on the defense, we are there. But long term, you know, we have no plan.
Well, and I think it's a cultural issue, too. Andrew Breitbart famously said that politics is just downstream from culture. He's totally right. When the Marxists came into America in 1930, thereabouts, they famously said that they need to withstand the long march through the culture to make changes, that they understood that it couldn't be made through politics, at least right away.
Right.
That they said that they had to attack the family, they had to attack religion to even get to their end goal, which I believe is, you know, is communism.
Sure.
Or, you know, form of socialism. And absolutely. So we need to have, you know, these kinds of discussions. It's not just about politics. It's about culture as well. It's very important.
Yep, and we are going to address that and a whole lot more in our book coming out, Renewing the Black and Millennial Mind, How to Become Woke and Free in America. It's going to be co-authored by myself and Scout. Scout, thank you so much for joining me on the show, on Karen's show, and I look forward to our project as it turns into a reality here in a couple of months. And I want to thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you so much, Casper.
All right, take care. Well, there you have it, folks. Scout Innes, she's an awesome millennial up in Boulder, fighting the good fight. Went from being a progressive liberal to a Republican conservative, so that's awesome. And, you know, we got a couple more minutes here in the show, and I want to close out with some things that just really I hope there are at least one or two or three Republicans listening in on this, because this is what we need to do to win. I want to give you the game plan to win. And it's called outreach. It's something we have not done well. Matter of fact, we hardly do it at all. It's the reason why Trump won, is because he did do and continues to do outreach. He has had several events at the White House with some of the groups I'm going to be talking about, because he understands it. He understands if he moves the dial on the Black and Hispanic vote 5-10%, it's over for the Democrat Party. He wins in a landslide, and they are struggling. That's why they want to keep replacing voters, you know, bringing in illegal aliens from other countries, because they have pretty much burnt the bridge when it comes to the folks in the community. So there are some organizations out there that just popped up over the last couple of years. One of them is called Walk Away. Now, in October of 2016, right before the election, I had the opportunity to go to D.C. and I attended the Walk Away Gala event and the Blexit event. They're both happening at the same time over the same weekend. So Walk Away was started by a young man by the name of Brandon. I can't pronounce his last name. His name is Brandon. Now, Brandon was a struggling gay actor, and he just was totally upset that Trump won the election. Yeah, I mean, you know, the typical crying on video, just saying, oh, my God, you know, what are we going to do? But over the course of several months of Brandon watching what was going on, he realized that he was being lied to by the media and by his friends and everybody else. They didn't understand what was going on. So make a long story short, he does a video called Walk Away. And he posts it up on social media, and it starts to take off, and it goes viral. So Brandon, fast forward, it's a one-year anniversary just happened last week. Brandon has been elevated to a he's a phenomenon now, really, and his walk-away movement is a powerful movement that's not going away. That movement should be championed, should be celebrated, should be talked about every day by the Republican Party, every day, because these are people who have walked away. That's the whole point of the name. They walked away from the Democrat Party. This is an organization that should be championed by the Republican Party, because they left your opponent. This is not even rocket science stuff. This is not Ben Carson brain surgery stuff. This is like first grade sales 101. This is reach out 101. This is outreach 101. This is low hanging fruit. How on earth can any Republican not be smart enough to know, candidate wise or leader, not be smart enough to know they need to reach out to these people on a daily basis, every day? They should be going to their events and having booths and doing voter registration. All these things, because even though they're walking away from the Democrat Party, they are not all automatically walking to the Republican Party. And the reason being is because the Republican Party is not giving them something to walk to. They're the party of no. You don't walk to no, you walk to yes. You walk to what can we do? How can we change things? How can we make it better? That's what people look for. That's what they walk to, right? When they walk away from something, they're looking for something to walk to, and the Republican Party has not stepped up to the plate enough. Now, there are pockets. There are some Republicans that get it. I talk to them all the time, and I keep saying the same thing over and over. It's like a broken record sometimes, but I'm saying what we need to do, and very few are moving in that direction. So the next organization is called Blexit, and it's blacks exiting the Democrat Party, Blexit. It was founded by Candace Owens. It's been going on for, I think they're not quite a year yet, but they're getting there. And this is another organization. They are exiting. These are young black professionals, men and women, exiting the Democrat Party, exiting the Democrat plantation. You would think that there'd be ticker tape parades by Republicans sponsored down every major main street in America celebrating the fact that blacks are finally exiting the Democrat Party. That should be championed everywhere in every corner of the Republican Party. It's not being championed. Not like it should be. There are some that talk about it, for sure. But not enough. Not enough. Everybody should be talking about it, not just one or two. Every Republican leader, every Republican sitting congressman and senator should be talking about these movements, and they're not. Now, Trump is, and by the way, Trump's approval rating in the black community is going up, in the Hispanic community is going up, like I mentioned earlier in the show. The Republican approval rating in the black community is stagnant. In fact, it might be going in the opposite direction. So understand, Trump's approval rating is going up, but the Republican approval rating is not. And that, my friends, is the problem. It's not Trump. Trump's not the problem. Trump is Trump, and Trump will always be Trump. But he's not the problem. The problem is the Republican leadership and the Republican Party. That's the problem. Now, I love them to death. I think they're great people. I think they want to do well. I think they mean well. I know they're not racist. That's not it. They're just not aware or something. It's strange. It's almost like there's a huge disconnect. It's unbelievable sometimes when I talk to them because and these are people that I know and love and hang around. So I know they're really good people, but they are totally disconnected from what they need to do to change things, to make a change. So Blexit, black exiting the Democrat Party. So shortly after Blexit shows up, Latinos exiting the Democrat Party. Okay, this is like another organization that is leaving your opponent. How on earth can you not be celebrating these people? Are you kidding me? They should be jumping up and down saying, oh, my God, this is awesome. Did you hear about Lexit? Did you hear about Blexus? Oh, my God. Walk away. Walk away. Walk away. That's what they should be doing. They as Republicans. They as conservatives. I do it. If you go to my Facebook page, if you want to be entertained, go to my Facebook page. Look for Casper Stockham, or you can look for Casper for Colorado. Find me and like my page. You will see that I am engaged every day talking about these things, every day. I'm talking to progressive liberals every day. I have arch nemesis on there that attack me every day. But I'm there, and I'm showing them love. I'm showing them compassion. I'm doing what all of us should be doing, is engaging these folks in conversation. Because at the end of the day, there are two things that control our lives the most, and those two things are politics and religion. So you can ignore both of those if you want to. That's fine. You can ignore them. They're not going to ignore you. They are going to be busy involving you in them. They're going to be busy wrapping you around their finger, whether it's politics, the politicians, or the religious leaders and religions. They're going to be busy working on you, whether you work on them or not. You can ignore them all you want, but they control everything that we say and do. So I suggest that you pay attention. I suggest that you pay a lot of attention and you get involved on a huge way. The last organization I'm going to talk about is called Jexodus. These are Jews exiting the Democrat Party. Praise the Lord. These are Jews exiting the Democrat Party. Oh, my God. Now, you would think, again, the president acknowledged them. You would think that every Republican on the face of the earth, every conservative, would be reaching out to the Jewish population and saying, welcome. How can we help? What can we do? How can we make things better for you? Whatever. Should be reaching out. They're not reaching out. Not on a mass scale. If I was in charge of the Republican Party in D.C., the RNC or whatever you want to call it, my number one charge would be reach out to the low-hanging fruit. Outreach, 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 outreach. And then when you're done outreaching, outreach some more. Okay? And if they did that, the Republican Party, I'm sorry, the Democrat Party would not win any more elections ever. Ever. I don't care if it's inner city. I don't care if it's rural. I don't care where it is. If the Republican Party stepped up and became the party of Lincoln, became the party of Frederick Douglass, became the party that freed the slaves, became the party that fought the KKK, became the party that fought for civil rights legislation, those were action items. Those were things they did, not defended. They did. Became the party, became the party that founded the NAACP, by the way. Republicans founded the NAACP. You probably didn't know that because that organization, along with a bunch of others, had been corrupted by Democrats. But the Republicans were the party that fought for all those things. And now what do they fight for? What do they stand for? Can anybody tell me? I don't know. I can't tell you that I'm in the Republican Party. I'm a registered Republican. I can't tell you one thing they stand for. That's sad. That's extremely sad. So walk away, Blexit, Lexit, and Jexodus. These are low-hanging fruit organizations that we should be reaching out to on a continual basis. And it would change the game. It would literally change the game. I can't believe in this short period of time, we've not had one person call in to ask a black man anything. You can ask me anything you want, and I will answer it. We're almost out of time, so if you're gonna call in, you might wanna do it soon because we're almost out of time here. But again, I'm so honored to be able to host this show and reach out to you and give you some information. Hopefully, I've given you some things to think about and give you some things that you didn't know before. I'm hoping that I share some things with you that may be new or it may not have been at the tip of your mind, but now they are. There's a couple of quick stories I wanted to end with, headlines that happened over the past year or so. Real Clear Politics, in October 18, Victor David Hansen, you probably have heard his name before, could Trump win 20% of the African-American vote in 2020? This is in 2018. So the conversations are out there, right? USA Today, this was in August 16, 2018. Trump at 36% approval rating around African-Americans, new poll finds. And when that poll came out, I remember when that poll came out, they quickly, I mean really quickly, had some other polls come out to contradict that poll. Because when that one came out, they said, oh my God, and they scrambled. And then shortly after that, the NAACP did a poll. The NAACP poll said 22% approval rating in the African-American community. So how they sell it right now, because it's still pretty much the same, but how they sell it is that there is a 70% disapproval or a 80% disapproval. Okay, but there's still a 20% approval or a 36% approval or whatever. So That translates into over 10% turnout vote for Trump. And a 10% turnout is a good turnout for a Republican candidate. That puts him into winning the popular vote range. Not necessarily happening, but it puts him in range. Politico. This is February 2009. Trump's secret to victory in 2020. Hispanic voters. That's a fact. Hispanic voters are leaning more towards Trump in the conservative vote, even more than blacks. And it's interesting because a lot of the black votes. Now, understand there are black Americans and then there are Africans who have migrated here and have become citizens. The Africans who have migrated here are doing well. They're doing well. A lot of them are doctors and lawyers and professionals. They are in the high income bracket here in America. Excuse me. But the blacks that were born here are struggling. They're struggling because they're stuck. They're stuck in the victimhood status. But the Africans that come here, just like any other immigrant that come here, is doing well. They're doing well. And then we have Politico. No, I covered that one. So People's Pundit Daily in March 2019 talks about what world Trump raises approval among blacks mean for election day. So when that happens, it means game over for Democrats. It literally means it's game over. So Washington Examiner said that Republicans confident Trump can pick up black votes supports in 2020. That was in March of 2019. So what I'm saying is that there is a window of opportunity that is happening and it's going to be very good. But we still have work to do, we as Republicans. Now, if you're not a Republican, you know, then it's not going to make a lot of sense to you. You're not going to like what I'm saying. But if you are a Republican, if you're conservative, this is a easy battle to win. But you've got to get involved. You've got to reach out to the local groups that you're around. You got to get plugged in and you got to start making a difference. And outreach is the name of the game. Hey, my name is Casper Stockham. I am so excited to be able to be on Spouting Off. Hopefully you learned something during the show. Karen will be back in a couple weeks and her and her hubby HW will be well rested and she'll be ready to go. I've enjoyed my time with you, but you know what? I got work to do and you guys got work to do as well. So I will see you on the next show. Talk to you later.